Want to take the SoCal Sound with you anywhere? Download the SoCal Sound app to your mobile device. You could stream the SoCal Sound 24/7. See what song just played on our playlist, listen to an archived show, read an article from our newsfeed, stay up to date, or watch a SoCal Sound session. It's all there, and it's now Apple CarPlay and Android Auto compatible. Download the SoCal Sound app today.
Well, hi there. My name's Mookie from 88.5, the SoCal Sound. Welcome back to our studios once again. Please know that we are listener-supported public radio. Please do your part and join us. Become a subscribing member at thesocalsound.org. Today we got OK Go here in our studio. We're going to get into the music right off the bat and then more with the band right after the first song. And again, we are the SoCal Sound.
Invented again in this grand ballroom of nothingness. We soar, we sail to the only sun there's ever been. Love, the only song there's ever been, just begun. Love, the only song there's ever been, plays again. Love, it's love. Music's invented again. And in this grand ballroom of nothingness, we soar, we sail to the only song there's ever been. Love, the only song there's ever been, just begun. Love, the only song there's ever been, plays again. Love, the only song there's ever been, never ends. Oh.
Don't sweat costly vehicle repairs this summer. Instead, donate that unused car, truck, RV, or boat that's been taking up space in your garage or driveway to the SoCal Sound today and help keep the best radio content and the SoCal Sound sessions on the air for years to come. It takes just a couple minutes to get started. We take care of the paperwork and the pickup is free and your gift is tax deductible. Go to thesocalsound.org, click support, or call 877-527-6123.
There you go. A great, almost stripped down kind of acoustic version of the song Love, a song that our listeners are probably familiar with. We're here with Damien and Tim, but the whole band is here as well. Okay, go. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
How are you today? How are you generally?
I'm well and generally well. Yeah. Well today and well generally.
I'm like good. I'm like a 7.
Are you?
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10.
I'll take a 7.
Yeah.
OKGo.net is the website. It appears that .com was already taken.
So. It was. It was. This is now like 30 years ago, 20 yeah. years ago or something, but it was taken. Mm-hmm. And we probably should have tried to buy it back from them at some point, huh?
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, .net is okay. And you guys are everywhere, by the way, online, so it's not too hard to find you guys. That was a great version of the song Love, totally sort of reimagined, I guess. Did you have to learn that just for this particular session?
We had to learn an acoustic version of it for the world in general, but you inspired us to learn that.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Nicely done. And thank a little bit later, there's some audience participation, me being part of the audience, so that's really cool. We're going to talk about some shows, and again, the new record and The Adjacent Possible is available right now. Your manager, Pete, emailed us with a link and said, you got to check out the vinyl. It is immaculate, or he said it's spectacular.
It is
and
both.
It really is.
Thank you. Yeah. It's like really fun, all these art projects you get to do when it is time to put out a record. And now that everybody loves vinyl again so much and wants a physical thing, we wanted to make something that you truly wanted to like hold and love.
Right. I love that. And it seems like the visual aspect of your art is really important to you guys as a creative outlet, you know. And yes, I'm talking about the music videos and stuff like that. We don't want to pigeonhole you guys into that music video, you know, band, but it is impressive time and time again. So.
Thank you.
And Grammy Award winning band, because of your music videos, right?
True.
The video for the song Love is, again, I think it's shot in like one continuous take. And it's crazy, guys.
It was really fun and challenging to make. We shot it in Budapest and we were in a train station and it was never more than 35 degrees in that place. Uh-huh. For 3 weeks.
It was quite cold. And there were a lot of pigeons flying around the whole time, so we had to dodge them a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Pigeons live inside the station. There are these, they put statues of crows up to try to scare away the pigeons.
Sure.
The pigeons sit on top of the crows and shit on them. And, excuse me, I probably can't say that here.
You know, actually, birds piss and shit simultaneously, so if you get shit on by a bird, you're getting pissed and shit on at the same time.
You make a good point.
It's a great point.
Yeah, you know, just a fun fact there, and I will be narrating National Geographic. Very soon. Originally, it's been said that this band started out in Chicago. However, before that, did you guys meet when you were like 11 years old?
Yes, we did. We did. We met, technically, we met in Michigan, like Northern Michigan.
Uh-huh.
Summer camp.
And
yes.
Was this an art camp or a music camp?
Right. Yes. Yeah, it was a place called Interlaken, which was known at the time mostly for its music. I went there for visual art.
I went there for theater.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we were getting it wrong even then. But we were long distance friends. I grew up in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Okay.
So we would see each other in the summers and then like send mixtapes back and forth during the years.
Yeah.
And then after college, reconvened in Chicago and started this band.
Right. So at first, I think it was, Stanley's Joyful Noise? Is that what it was?
That was a band that I was in college that Damien
produced. I had a record label in high school, so I would put out their stuff there. I mean, record label being like I made 7 inches and brought them to record stores and sometimes they
Level Records.
Incredible.
Yep.
Yeah. You want to know what's incredible about it? The reason I did was because a record label in D.C. called Simple Machines had put out a pamphlet on how to make your own records. It was incredible. It was just like, here, this is how much it will cost, and here are the phone numbers of their various pressing plants, and exactly how to do it. I walked up to the Discord house where, you know, Discord Records was run, and I was like, can I borrow some money so I can start a record label? And they said yes.
Incredible.
Didn't you also sell your baseball cards?
I did also sell my baseball cards.
Oh, man. Yeah, maybe some of those would be quite expensive today, although I don't know.
You had some good ones.
I had some good. I'm guessing that the records are not worth as much as the baseball cards would have been.
Yeah.
But a lifetime of making music is worth more than the baseball cards ever would be.
There you go. Yeah,
appreciate that. Again, we're here with Damian and Tim in the band OK Go. Grammy Award-winning OK Go, the new record's available right now. It's a double vinyl, which is spectacular, right?
With a pop-up sculpture in the middle.
I know, it's crazy. People could check that out on their website right now. Again, okgo.net. And The Adjacent Possible is the name of the new record, the fifth studio record by our count.
That's right.
We're going to get another sort of reimagined version of a brand new song off that record. A Stone Only Rolls Downhill. You want to give
featuring,
us a this is the one.
This is featuring the SoCal Sound Clapsters. These are some of the finest clappers you're ever going to see.
Oh, yeah.
One, two, three. One, two, one.
I wish I could say it would all be all right.
There you go. Another great song by OK Go. Another new one, A Stone Only Rolls Downhill. We've heard that and the song Love right here in our studio. We are 88.5 The SoCal Sound. Like, share, and subscribe all over the interwebs if you can. public radio. Seems like you may have an affinity for public radio. There was a period of time where OK Go was the house band for the Ira Glass program, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how did that come about? And what was your role for This American Life?
Well, I was an engineer at the News Bureau for NPR in Chicago in the late 90s. And many of my friends were like other kids just out of college who were working at NPR. Like, that's sort of what my social scene was. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them were interns at This American Life or at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And it just was kind of our crew in Chicago. When the band got, like, when we started touring a lot and stuff, Ira Glass asked us to be the sort of house band for his touring show. They start the fifth anniversary of This American Life. I remember being like, "Wow, it's been around for five whole years." We were the house band. It was the biggest shows we'd ever played by a long shot. Like, we'd play to 120 people at Brownies one night, and then go to like Town Hall on Broadway the next night for 3,000 people. It was fun. It was really.
And so your affiliation with public radio probably helped in a way get the band exposure, right?
Definitely. And also, I mean, it's just, as your listeners know, public radio is such a specific and wonderful treasure trove of sort of intellectual thought, you know, like whether it's music or it's news or it's commentary. It's like there's so few places where you actually can feel uplifted by the radio. Mm-hmm. And being in that community of people who sort of challenge each other to be better thinkers and better citizens and better consumers of the art around them was just like very good for us over the course of our lives, but especially as we first started out, to not be chasing like the sort of, you know, pop radio version of success, but rather just to be like going for the art.
It was interesting to have that be sort of more or less like what felt like a break at the time, you know, because it like our big break was not like opening up for Guided by Voices or something like that. Yeah. You know, like it didn't even feel traditional then, you know, and it was the start of like a lovely untraditional career.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for a band, an up and coming band, I guess. And, you know, I love the fact that it was public media, you know, because we love that. Because we are public radio. Again, the SoCal Sound, we're here with Damian and Tim from OK Go. The discography at this point is a lot. It's an amazing body of work. Also, the videography, if you will, as we all know. You've had songs placed in TV and film. Several years ago, I have a young daughter. We're watching Sesame Street, and all of a sudden, OK Go pops up with a song about primary colors. That is amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite things you've ever done, frankly. How did that even come to be?
They just, the people at Sesame Street just asked us to write them a song. Yeah. There's two different, I don't know if it's still the same, but at the time, there were two different production companies that made Sesame Street. One did all of the on-the-street stuff, like the, you know, Oscar the Grouch and the, like, the sort of world that is there. And then another did all the sort of interstitial stuff that they throw away to when they're just like, you know, and they just cut to like a random thing about like moose, you know. And I remember growing up on really loving the Pointer Sisters song that was on there. Remember 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
That's burned into my head.
It's so good, right?
Thought I was the only one. That really resonated with me for some reason.
It's a great song, and it's a great little video. But it's also like for whatever reason that does something to humans, right? And and they said their only brief was like, we have three things we're trying to teach this year, and I can't remember what the other two were. They were like color theory, this and that, and we're like, we can do color theory probably. And I remember being in my house, like I was putting away laundry and just trying to think of like the simplest way you could describe, like, what is color theory in its basic thing. It's like red and yellow make orange. Orange, done. That's the song.
Yeah.
And it was really fun to like actually try to strip something down to its most basic, like try to get it as much like a playground chant as possible.
Sure, you know? Sure. When you're talking about primary colors, I feel like that's the direction to be headed in, you know?
Turns out we were wrong, by the way. I learned a lot from this guy, Art Pete, or Art Repeat, I think his name is, on that I follow on the interwebs. Uh-huh. We're wrong about primary colors. They're actually, it really should be red and cyan that are primary, okay. Not in red and green. We were taught wrong. And now we are teaching people wrong. So we are part of the misinformation campaign.
You should know that being a visual artist at 11 years old in art camp when you met Tim.
I know. Yeah. Yep.
No. That's okay. I did have another question. You've done tons of charity over the years, you know, including like during the pandemic and stuff like that. I wanted to ask you specifically about, is it called OK Go Sandbox? Is that what it is?
It is, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's our, we have a kind of nonprofit side project, we call it. It is nonprofit. Yeah. It's kind of a side project, the kind of it. And what happened was we realized that tons and tons of teachers were using our videos in their classrooms as teaching tools. And that was such a huge gift to realize like that our the things we were making were going out in the world and doing better work than we had intended them to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like mm-hmm. we're the selfish dudes who are like in a rock band, and yet the songs are out there teaching kids physics. And we figured that like, the teachers who are doing the real work there, like the people who have actually given their lives to making other lives better, the least we could do was support them, you know? And so we made this web portal basically where they can go and download teaching tools that help use those videos. So it's like, there's like, there'll be classroom challenges or curriculum, things that align it with a state curriculum and that kind of stuff. And it's been really satisfying to like to have the to see this little community of really great teachers kind of gel around that. Mm-hmm.
Incredible. I did want to ask you: is there you've got a couple of shows at the Bellwether here in Los Angeles, and then more shows to go around the country and elsewhere. Is there a visual component to the live performances?
No, the lights are off.
I'm sure you have some lights and stuff.
We require the audience to close their eyes.
It's a big listening party.
we like our visuals. We are not, our videos are not on stage with us. And there's no like video screen on stage with us.
Right.
And that's a very specific choice because I think the best way to put this is that like the videos themselves, their highest form is basically like a live show always is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. what the reason we make those videos in one take generally is to prove to you that it's a real event, mm-hmm. right? It's like, not intellectually, but viscerally. Like, when you watch them, you have to feel like you're in the room. So there's a lot of like signaling to the viewer that like, this is a real thing, this really happened. And the only reason for that is like, we're not trying to make a film that convinces you of something else in the world. We're trying to make an actual event that we just happened to film, mm-hmm. right? And that's what a live show is. Like, we don't really need the videos in a live show because what we already have is that personal human connection with the audience.
Right, makes perfect sense.
So this is a very good light show, but there's no video for these shows, at least.
It's, mm-hmm. it's a big party. And we have done in the past, and will do in the future, a video show that's dedicated to the videos where we live score our videos, and we have a screen behind us, and play pretty much the whole catalog, and we take questions from the audience, and that's in like performance art centers, and it's more of like a
cultural event.
Sit down show with an intermission, and like the volume is a little lower so that people can bring their families and stuff like, and that those shows are great, but it's definitely different than a rock show.
Yeah, it's like, not a rock show.
When we're doing the rock show, it's like stand up, get sweaty, dance.
Yeah,
yeah, and clap.
Yeah.
In what ways has the music industry changed? Since you guys started out.
How much time do you have?
Or what stands out to you the most?
The algorithm.
Yeah.
That everything is, the algorithm is the great arbiter now. That like, we have the first song on our album, which is called Impulse Purchase. It's written to the algorithm, or it's actually written to the AI of the future. It's written to the beings that will exist after the singularity, because it felt like it was the last song written on a record, because we had this very earnest, very human, very organic album, and it felt a little bit weird not to recognize that we're like the last moment where we're making a record by playing instruments and like stumbling through it and trial and error is still the only way to do it, you know, like by the time we can have made another album, pressing an AI button to get something that sounds like OK Go will be easier than actually making an OK Go.
Sure. It's scary.
It's weird. And of course, that's a long, long, I know you don't want to spend this conversation thinking about that, but I don't remember what brought me to that. What were we talking about?
Just how the music industry changed.
Oh, yeah. That, so the algorithm is like, it's not, it's weird that what will happen is that algorithms will decide if our record is worth listening to.
Right.
And they're based on human reaction, I mean, reaction to it, but only loosely. You know,
the algorithm may decide who gets to view this video once it's published. You know,
definitely will.
It's nuts.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to have to consider.
No, it really is.
Yeah.
The other, even truer answer to your question probably is that like we're the last people to know what's happening in the music industry. Like we've done everything as kind of wrong as you can. Like that's our way of succeeding in it 20 years ago was to put out a video of us dancing on treadmills that our record label aggressively did not want us to put out, you know, and then it's always been our thing to just like figure out the small group of people who like our weird sense of humor and our type of music and our thing and sort of try to connect directly with them. And that's not how the music industry worked then, and I think it's gotten differenter since even then. I don't really know, like, when bands ask us, young bands go like, what would you do if you're in my shoes? I'm like, I have no clue.
Right, it's the Wild West out there.
Yeah.
Really.
How has touring changed over the years for you guys?
How has touring changed?
Traveling with more stuff, trying to take care of your body a little bit better?
We're certainly trying to take care of ourselves better, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And tour more wisely, you know.
We take a lot more time off because we have families.
Sure.
So it used to be that we, like, in 2005 through 2007, we toured for 31 months without ever taking more than 10 days off in a row. Like, that's 2.5 years, just every day.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was awesome if you're in your 20s and that's like what there's great parts of it, but you are definitely burned at the end, and you cannot actually have a family in the middle of that either. And so three of us have kids, and like right now what we're doing is touring 1 week on and then 1 or 2 weeks off.
Okay.
And so like it's certainly not easy on our partners, but it is not impossible either.
Right, and it seems like a better approach. You know, what else are you gonna do?
It's a more humane approach, I would say.
Sure.
I mean, one of the weird things about the industry being so messed up is that it just keeps reminding you that you should only do this if you really love doing it. Mm. You know, like you shouldn't be in a rock band because you think it's a good job in 1975 or 1995. But now it's like way more obvious than ever that like this is not a way to like have your ego fantasy of being famous or of like being out there in the world or of getting lots of money, you know, like do it because you love it. And our tours could certainly be more like aggressive, but we wouldn't love it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Again, we're here with Damian and Tim, and it's OK Go here in our studio. We've gotten some amazing music already here, and we do have one more song to rip into. But again, the new record and the Adjacent Possible, it's so good, you guys.
Thank you.
You know, and I think a lot of people just know you for the music videos, but I tell you what, this album is great, and it was really nice to consume a full album and to prep for this interview and listen to the whole thing, you know, because again, in this day and age, it's song and then single and then single and then whatever.
Yeah.
But again, congratulations on the album. It's so good. And it's
a
pleasure to meet you. And thanks for incorporating me and some others in the performance today.
You guys were spectacular.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We did several takes because I messed up quite a bit.
You know what? We've had audiences try to clap along. They speed up.
Always want to speed up.
Oh, interesting.
You guys had a great time.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you guys so much. We're going to get one more song, This Too Shall Pass. It's a throwback jam from OK Go. And again, right here in our studio, we are 88.5, The SoCal Sound. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. especially when you're already getting yours. Cause if your mind don't move and your knees don't bend, don't go blaming the kids again. When the morning comes, 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 when the morning comes.
The SoCal Sound Sessions are a production of 88.5 FM, the SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Mark Mookie Kazor. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce. Video version shot and edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. You could find the SoCal Sound on the radio in Southern California at 88.5 FM or streaming 24 hours a day and through our free app at thesocalsound.org.